today on the American Music Show with John McEwen. He's going to be interviewing Michael on Fire. His label is Real Eyes Productions.
John McEwen does what I would call the first wave of Americana music, because he's one of the legends.
Would you mind if I give him a ringy-dingy to see if he's free?
No, I don't mind at all.
Hi, I was just sending you another email.
I wanted to introduce you to Michael on Fire. He's here.
Oh, great.
Hi, John. How are you?
Hello, Michael. Let me, excuse me turning this up.
Okay, everybody stop typing.
I'm done.
Okay, great. I just thought it would be wonderful for you guys to say hello to each other.
I'm just honored to be speaking in the same breath as you, so.
See?
I have been a fan of yours for many years, John. And before you even go on, one time I gave your son my stage in Grand Junction, Colorado, because he was just starting out there and he needed some place to sing, and I was playing, and so we let him do a set in the middle of our thing. So that was fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I just hung up with him. So when did you start playing? Let's say seriously, or did you have another job prior to this?
I've never had another day job. I've been playing professionally since I got out of high school. As soon as I graduated from high school, I grabbed my guitar and I went to Greenwich Village thinking I was Bob Dylan like everybody back in those days, you know. After a few months, came up running back with my tail between the legs, and I've been doing it ever since, though. I've never had another job other than...
What high school?
Detroit, called Catholic Central. I got kicked out of there in 11th grade. Then I graduated from a place called Stevenson High School.
Was there anything that you learned in high school that you carried with you into the music life that you pursued?
The one thing I carried into it was the person who probably had the most effect on me was the choir teacher, somebody who actually gave me my first form and my first stage, because I was always a fish out of water in high school. I was an artist from day one, and I just wasn't a part of that whole school experience. I didn't feel comfortable in penny loafers and chinos. You know, I wanted to wear blue jeans and cowboy boots, you know?
I thought my first part of my name was Dogpile On.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, yeah, Dogpile On McEwen is what I heard more than hello.
Yeah. You know, I was a popular kid and all that. I knew how to negotiate myself through little social settings, but I was never very comfortable there because I couldn't concentrate. I was a daydreamer.
Considering the position you're at now, doing what you love to do, and you have a new album out, where did you record that and with whom?
Parts of it were done up in Atascadero, California, with Tyson Leonard, but the bulk of the album was recorded in Novi, Michigan, co-produced by Jamie Asenzo, multi-magnificent musician, and a guitar player from London, England called Sed Curtis, who's been with me off and on for 35 years. And then I had a few other musicians come in who I've been playing with. I only play with professional musicians, not guys who just want to be on an album because, you know, it's cool. I play with real players.
Well, you're a professional. I mean, I liken you, although I haven't been not that familiar with you, that I work in my own world and with blinders on because I have to get to the next gig and not miss a flight and have family and all that. So we sometimes don't pay attention to each other unless we're on the same show.
You and I one time played the same concert series called Tales from the Tavern. You did that, I did that. That's my closest proximity to you other than being a major fan.
Well, thank you. But Ron, out of Tales from the Tavern,
Ron Cologne.
He does a good job out there in San Luis Obispo area.
Yeah, and truly.
Looking for good shows to go through, just Google Tales from the Tavern. And, yeah, I was a little nervous that night myself.
I saw the film of it. You did a magnificent job.
Well, I'm good at not looking as on the outside like I feel on the inside.
I mean, yes, I get that, too.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't been in that area alone. But so you're at this point in your career. Are you happy with this album?
This is probably the best album that I've come up with. Explain this to you, John. A year ago, I was playing at the International Jazz Festival with Perry Robinson and Bedell Roy and Mad Cat Ruth. Just great players playing jazz for that. I decided for a couple months to concentrate on that. And the better I got at that, the smaller my audiences became. So I just then continued my roots thing. I'm a singer-songwriter, and this is the one I am most pleased with. I made this for my own self, and I love the way it feels. I love the way it feels.
Right now, it would be good to say to those that are listening what your name is and what the website is.
My name is Michael on Fire. The website is www.michaelonfire.com.
M-I-C-H-A-E-L?
Correct.
On Fire, F-I-R-E.
Correct. Three okay. words, Michael on Fire.
So how did it work with your family? With your family, you're 25, 28 years old, and you're out there being a musician. Was it working?
For me, with my family, they always told me to cut my hair and go get a real job. Forever, that's what they always told me. They could never quite understand it because my parents were from Italy, okay? They came to America, and they wanted the American dream for all their children, right? They saw me being a musician, and it just something did not register there. They loved me, but the very first time they ever saw me play, I was 27 years old on the ABC National News. That's the first time they ever even saw me play. So it wasn't an easy path that I chose because.
And they were just glad you didn't. They were just glad you didn't have a number under your neck, right?
Absolutely, sure. It's a hard life. You know what it is.
Yeah, and I'm asking because it's quite a sacrifice that people often don't realize that you get into the music business and you often don't get paid, but you're still doing an 18-hour day where you've traveled 12 hours to get somewhere to do a sound check at a gig that you're going to go on stage 6 hours later and have to leave an hour after that to get to the next one that you might get paid at. Well, that's a lot of stuff that someone of your nature, who I highly respect, has gone through. I've been very lucky that I may have had more paid days playing than you, but still there's many times when there weren't. But I want people to know that you are doing what you believe in and happier about it than it sounds like than you've ever been.
I love it. I mean, first of all, that's the whole thing. People say, God, is it hard? I mean, everything's hard, but when you're a professional, you learn how to do it, and you learn how to do it really good with all of the problems that arise. But I love it. There's a lot of people who don't love their jobs. I love my job. I try not to open for anybody, and I always get paid. I've never bought into that thing, you know, well, just do this and it'll showcase you. I mean, I never bought into any of that stuff, you know?
Oh, you mean there's two things people don't realize that you hear when you get in the music business. There's two phrases. Actually, there's about three. The first one you hear is, oh, it's not a money thing.
Right.
To hire you to do something. Oh, really glad you're available. Oh, by the way, it's not a money thing. And I don't know what plumber or taxi driver you can go to and say, I need your help. It's not a money thing.
Correct. They don't exist out there in the real world.
What wedding you're going to play for where we don't have much of a budget. And the next comment you hear is it's really good exposure.
Yeah, it's great exposure.
Exposure.
And you know the kind of people who need good exposure, John, are the people that have day gigs and do it as a hobby. You know, those are the people who need the exposure so they could go do the free gigs as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I might say a different thing here because you can do what you do, stand behind the art and the value of it, and it's done quite well for you. But in my mind, if somebody said, what's one of the contributions to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band lasting 45 years? I would say two things, that we took some shows that were the cheapest shows, because sometimes the highest paying ones were the least fun, and the ones that we took that looked like a fun place were the good ones, being that, and we did a lot of things for free. We almost never said no.
Well, you know, for the first, put it this way, for the first 10 years of doing this, I would play wherever, whenever, for free, for money, whatever. But okay. As soon as I decided that I had a wife and two kids and I had to bring home the bacon, since I've lost them because of this business or because of the fact that I wasn't making the kind of money that a family actually needs at the time.
I understand. Now, I agree with that because I was also talking about the first 10 years.
And
where you're trying to get an imprint of some kind. Now, the other thing that people don't realize is you don't go to school and learn how to be a road player or a stage performer in this sense. You have to go out to that on-the-job training. And the only way to do that is to be on a flatbed truck one day and in a little concert hall the next day. And the next day you're in a Catholic girls' school lunchroom.
Right, exactly. Exactly that. You know, isn't it interesting now? When I came up, when you came up, it was called grassroots. We have to start from the bottom and play anywhere we could. Now, in this day and age with this technology, you could go on television, be exposed to 20 million people in 5 minutes, and they're major stars. Of course, I don't think that they have any kind of lasting legacy in that universe, but it's amazing how different it all is. So, I came up the old way, just like you did.
I think there's good things to say about all of it. What's the name of your album?
My album is called Always Yes.
Always Yes.
Correct.
And how long has it been available?
I think it was released January the 11th.
Wow, that's great. What have you had some reviews so far?
I've gotten reviews all over the world so far.
Enough talk about you. What do other people say about you?
Most of the reviews have been really good because the album feels great. The lyrical content is really good. There's some deep Americana stories about some historical figures here and there.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
Let's say you met somebody on a train and they don't know much about American music or maybe music in general, but they know stuff from 20, 30, 40 years ago, and they haven't been paying attention, and they say, well, what do you sound like? You know, it's the old, hey, man, what's your sound?
Let me just tell you how it came about. I was doing a gig. I played in September in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, Long Island, those places, and I was driving across Pennsylvania, and I was listening to Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited. And then I put on the band, music from Big Pink. Then I put on Van Morrison, Hymns to the Silence or something. And the only thing I thought is, like, I really want this to feel good. Every one of those albums, the feel on them was just amazing. So what I wanted to do was just get that feel from myself. I got it. I got that feel from myself. So who do I sound like? Most reviews say he's a cross between John Mellencamp, Bob Seger, Mark Knopfler, Bob Dylan, Van Morrison. You know, it's of that legacy. It's of that legacy. I'm a, I emote. Although, you know, I always hated my voice, but somehow people are saying that I have this very distinctive good voice on this stuff. I don't know, understand where that comes from, but.
Well, let them blab all over the world.
Absolutely.
I think it's good to hear how you derived your influences, for sure, and to hear that that's supported in print by other people's opinions. People will be fortunate to find you. And I think the way I see that is all those people you mentioned have set down some pretty good templates.
Oh, absolutely. That's where we come from.
Yeah, how to present music, and I think people should listen to you to find out what those influences are. It's just like listening to a new bluegrass group. Well, you know, they've listened to Flatt and Scruggs and...
Absolutely.
And Don and Reno and different people, Bill Monroe. Well, this is kind of what you represent.
Well, you know, the thing is, what's kind of interesting about that, before those people actually influenced me, I was listening to Les Paul and Mary Ford I was listening to some of the old people like Hank Williams. I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry is still one of... I still can't wrap my whole being around that song. It's so amazing. And as far as the bluegrass people and stuff, I mean, that's what I really wanted to be. I wanted to play pedal steel, banjo, fiddle, guitar. I wanted to do all of that. Somebody convinced me that there's no way I could get good at anything if I tried to do everything, which was really a mistake because I could do whatever I wanted to do, and I do play a lot of instruments. None of them very, you know, none of them as well as I play the guitar, but I can make music.
But it's funny, I'm glad you didn't go the bluegrass direction. I think it's less crowded where you are.
Probably way less crowded, especially at my age, way less crowded because...
I think that there's a lot of people looking for somebody new to listen to, and they need to find Michael On Fire. Look into it. It's michaelonfire.com, O-N-F-I-R-E-M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And the album, again, is called...
Always Yes.
Always Yes. Promote the artist's album as best possible without getting too tangential.
And that's perfect.
Ruthie, Michael, I need to go. Michael, I hope to cross paths physically with you at some point.
We shall. I'll be out in California soon.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm in New York, where I live now. If you're ever here, let me know. Say hi to Ron for me and tell him I haven't been there again.
I shall tell him.
When do you want to be there?
Anytime, Ruthie.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Yeah.
You stay safe and stay healthy, John. Thank you.
Okay,
keep
at it.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much. Michael on Fire. His label is Real Eyes Production.
That's out of Santa Ynez, California. Ruthie, thank you so much.
Learned to play the fiddle on Chief Redford's violin. A gift to me when I was 21. He had long since left this world and had sat for many years. Gathered dust and longed to play again. I could feel those northern nights, long legs gowns and smoke. Young bride, young groom, hear those old tunes. Learned to play the fiddle on Chief Redbird's violin. Only wish that I could play like him. Never even met the man, but I could feel his soul. Every time I held his violin, when I touched that ancient wood, the path would seem to sing. When I touched that horsehair bow to string, maybe he was Chippewa, Ottawa. Only wish that I could be like him. Something seemed so mystical when I held that violin. Smelled the inside of that beat-up case. And I could just imagine as I watched my clumsy fingers dancing gracefully across those strings. He was touched when he was born with the amber blood. Oh, the burgundy maple tree. Anointed by the autumn dance, when the trees turned gold in 1933. And I learned to play the fiddle on Chief Redbird's violin. Only wish that I could play like him. Only wish that I could play like him.